Okay, this hour we'll take your questions, your stories on the paranormal, UFOs with Greg Bishop. He's got his own podcast going, and of course, all the information is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back. We're going to take your phone calls this hour with Greg Bishop, who's been kind enough to stay for a couple hours with us. Greg, let's review a little bit of what we talked about last hour, and then I have a few more questions for you, of course, but you were interrupted by the break again.
Yeah, well, those happen in live radio, so that's fine.
They do. They do indeed. But some of the stories that are out there, do they include any more young people? Okay, one of my concerns is that young people aren't really involved in the study of Bigfoot or UFOs or ghosts or things like that anymore, and that this could be a dying breed right now.
Yeah, I think it's, partially might be due to the internet, where you don't really need to go out and look at anything or find out anything. You can, or you have the illusion that you don't need to do that.
Right.
You can just sit at home or look at it on your phone or whatever. And it takes somebody with a sense of curiosity, adventure, and maybe some daring to go out and do these things and look at these things and think about it and talk to people and dare to have an opinion. You know, that's another thing a lot of people are scared to do. They're scared to have an opinion.
Well, they're afraid of being ridiculed, aren't they?
Yeah, that's the other thing. You shouldn't have to be afraid of being ridiculed, or you shouldn't. I mean, I guess you're going to be, but you should go, whatever. Fortune belongs to the brave, I guess.
How do you combat that? Can you?
You mean younger people getting into the field?
Well, the ridicule portion.
I don't think you can combat it, because there are certain people that are never going to be satisfied, and it doesn't really make any difference to them what you say. They're just going to ridicule you. I was sort of trying to start a craze. I was trying to sell T-shirts that say "Do not engage" on them, because most of the time when somebody comes to you, especially online, with some argument about something, all they want to do is argue, or they just want to make themselves better, look better, or you look bad, or whatever. It has nothing to do with the subject matter. So it's basically a waste of your time to engage with somebody who's not going to listen to you, interact with you, and exchange ideas, whether you agree with them or not. That's really rare. And I find it's valuable when I can find people that I can do that with.
Favorite UFO movie?
Oh, God. You know what my favorite one recently was? Was Arrival.
That's not bad.
I loved Arrival because it was so oblique in the way that it approached the subject. It's not, that the aliens didn't look normal, like anybody expect them to be. The language aspect was very interesting to me. And the fact that the language, it pointed out that language determines what your, in a great part, what your reality is. And their reality was completely different than ours, so their language was encoded in a completely different way. And it was fascinating to me that that subject was dealt with. Also, I'm very into the alien writing thing. It's something that's fascinated me for many years.
What did you think of the movie Contact?
Don't hit me. I never saw it.
Really?
I haven't seen that movie.
It's a classic.
I haven't. Yeah. I know it is. And it deals with some, I think it deals with some of the some of the other same ideas that I'm fascinated in about, who are we, how do we see ourselves, how do others see us, how might a completely different race see us, things like that.
What about Independence Day?
Fun popcorn movie, absolutely no basis in anything that I think is really real, except for possibly that weird things go on at Area 51.
the original classic, The Day the Earth Stood Still.
I love that movie. You know, my father, that's his favorite movie. And so he...
It's a great movie with Michael Rennie.
Yeah, exposed me to that movie very early on, and I think it's a very intelligent treatment of the subject. It's almost like a contactee message, a UFO contactee message, kind of like, we're coming from another planet. We know that you're going to destroy yourselves if you continue in this way, and we're telling you to cut it out. I only wish that could happen, but I don't think that's going to happen. But it's a very good metaphor for somebody coming from outside our culture and looking at it and saying, you people are crazy. Why are you trying to kill yourselves?
Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
I saw that when I was a kid, and it affected me deeply. And I think it rekindled my interest in UFOs after it had kind of gone away for a little while when I first saw it. Very well done, amazing movie, still important and still a great movie. Timeless. It's really timeless.
Next up, let's take some calls for Greg Bishop. We'll pick it up by going to Joe in the Bronx to get us started. Joseph, go ahead.
George, how are you?
All right, Joe.
Good. Yeah, Greg, I wanted to ask you about the Travis Walton story. Are there any similarities between Travis Walton's story, or is it unique in its own right? And also, Don Schmidt mentioned that they kept an alien alive. He may still be alive. From the Roswell incident, called J-Rod, or he's got a spindly type of body, and he works with the military. How much truth do you place, or how much credence do you place in that story? And also, what did they do with the dead alien bodies from the Roswell incident?
They took those to Wright-Patterson, I believe. They put them in little caskets, according to Glenn Dennis, who was the mortician at the time. He is dead now. And by the way, Travis Walton will be my stage guest in Scottsdale, Arizona on April 21st in our live stage show. But go ahead, Greg.
Yeah, I think Travis's story is not totally typical, and it's not typical, you know, especially for the time it was reported. He didn't really have much to go on if you want to say that he made it all up or borrowed from other people.
He passed a lie detector test,
yeah.
Didn't he?
Like, I, as in Betty and Barney Hill, I believe he believes what happened to him. I wasn't there. I have no idea. I was sitting with Peter Robbins once, and we were talking about this, and I said, what do you think happened to Travis? And he said, I think he was abducted by aliens. And I said, I don't know what happened to him because there's no way to prove what happened to him after he disappeared. He just disappeared for a while and then reappeared and said he'd had this experience. I believe that he believes he had this experience. If I was standing next to him during it, I don't know what I would have seen. So my mind remains open about it. And it's the same about the Roswell thing. I don't know what happened in Roswell because there's no way for, there's a lot of people telling stories. There's a lot of witness testimony, but none of that stuff is available to us. So it's like the Kennedy assassination. I don't know if we'll ever have a proper answer to it.
No, we probably won't. And of course, the discussion that we have a captured alien, we all have heard these stories, Greg, haven't we?
Yeah, we've heard it for a long time, and they're stories. We have no way of knowing how true they are, how true or false they are. So, like I said, it's another one of those gray box things for me. It's like, okay, I'm just going to leave it in the maybe box until such time as better information comes out. Even if that's never, if I have to not make a decision about it for the rest of my life, I'm fine with that.
Skype is open, by the way, at George97313. Next up, let's go to Frank, east of the Rockies in Wisconsin. Hey, Frank, go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to relate my one and only UFO story and see if your guest has any thoughts or comments on what
okay.
I observed. I'm 57 years old and this is the first time I've ever seen UFOs. 2 years ago, March 10th. Driving to work about 9:30 at night here in central Wisconsin and heading west. Driving along, I noticed something on my left eye, off to my left, and I looked, glanced over, and I saw Sirius, star Sirius, and it was a moonless night. And then I had to do a double take because I thought I saw something else, and sure enough, Sirius was straight south from me, and a little to the west of Sirius was an orange ball. No shimmer around it, no glowing around it. And if you were to hold a pencil eraser out about hand arm's length up from me, that's about how size it was in the sky. So it was a good sized ball. It wasn't just a pinpoint of light. I could see a plane on either side of both traveling in the same direction to the south. And of course, I'm paying attention to driving. So I'm looking off to the west as I'm traveling that way. And all of a sudden, I see same thing. I would say probably almost 45 degrees apart, maybe 35, 45 degrees apart, southwest to west. Same thing, another orange ball. And then next to that, another one came on. And then next to that one, another one came on. That came, happened to where it came. It was either four or five orange balls. They looked like had quality of a glowing ember as the campfire is going out. The one to the southwest, they did it pretty much all by itself. These other four or five came on. And then those four or five randomly went out into one at a time until there was one left. then the last two, one in the grouping that was left to the west and the one to the southwest, went out altogether. As far as I could tell, they were not moving. I know they weren't planets. I know they weren't stars. I know they weren't drones. I know they weren't airplanes. I know they weren't a comet. So I don't believe in aliens per se, but I've always been open to UFOs. And again, this is the first time I've ever seen it, seen anything like this. It was pretty amazing.
You'll never forget it.
Nope, nope. I don't know if it was one UFO or two UFOs or multiple, but objects, I should say. But so as far as these orange orbs, I went online to look to see if there's anything like that. I found a couple of videos or pictures that were close. Do you have any knowledge or any comments on the characteristics of these orange orbs? I know there's all kinds of...
Well, a lot of people, Frank, say that these orbs could be spirits, kind of ghostly. What do you think of this, Greg?
Yeah, I've heard of these too. This is an old phenomenon. People have seen glowing balls.
And some of it is plasma balls.
For hundreds of thousands of years, they've been reported. One strange thing is that there is a UFO researcher discussed in my book, Project Beta. He saw them inside his house, near the ceiling.
Was it ball lightning?
No, they were ball about softball size, and they're about orange. They're kind of orange or peach colored.
Just floating around up there.
Yeah, floating around near the ceiling. And if you went up there and tried to touch them, they would turn off like somebody turning off a light bulb. Like an incandescent light, they wouldn't blink out. They'd like fade out very quickly. But yeah, this is glowing orbs is a very common report. Yeah.
Next up, we've got Howard in Las Cruces, New Mexico. Hey, Howard, go ahead.
Hello, George. Thank you.
Sure, Howard.
My cell phone's been doing the Humpty dance all day, so if it drops off, I apologize.
Okay, well, let's get you in fast.
There's a couple of sightings in the past that go way back, like the 52 sighting over the Capitol that was well documented with air traffic control and sightings before the government decided to slam the door on this UFO dance and make it all top secret. There's definitely something going on, especially like the Benny Hill abduction. He had something to tell.
Well, and there it went, just there.
Oops.
So let's see if we can fill in what he was trying to say. Some of these abductee cases are probably pretty authentic. What do you think, Greg?
I think things are happening to people, but I do past that, I'm not really sure what's happening. They tell me what's happening to them. I believe they believe what's going on, but if somebody was sitting in that room with a camera, or even another person was sitting there watching what was going on, I'm not exactly sure what they would see. I think an abduction and some, close encounter cases are very personal to the witness that it's happening to, and that their impressions, their memories, their how the nervous system deals with strange input. That's a very important part of UFO research that hasn't been dealt with yet. I'm not saying these people are delusional at all. I'm saying that we have to really look at how the human mind deals with strange input and maybe start with a clean slate there.
Greg, do you deal with stories, ghostly stories and things like that on your podcast?
Yeah, I've had some ghost researchers on, and actually I had a... For the first time ever, I went on a ghost hunting expedition in Nova Scotia with my friend Paul Kimball, who has a show called Haunted.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually sat in a room, and some woman said, I felt something go by me right now, and I felt this tingling go from my scalp all the way down the back of my body down to my heels and go out. The other thing that happened is somebody said, I think there's a cold spot. So I walked over to where they said the cold spot was. And this was in the summer in Nova Scotia, so it was warm. It was like 80 degrees, 70, 80 degrees, especially inside this building at night. I felt nothing. And then Paul's cameraman, Dylan Garland, he said, oh, yeah, there's another one here too. So I walked over to where he was. And as I walked behind him, it was like I was walking through a wall of air conditioning.
It was that cold.
Yes, it was very cold, and then we had other things like electronics answering our questions, and you know, Paul would not mess with me. So it was a very strange night. A lot of things happened, which I gather is kind of rare.
Let's go to Canada. Marcel's with us now. Welcome to the program, Marcel. Good morning.
Good morning, George and Gary.
Greg.
I just wanted to relate my UFO encounter.
Sure.
Venus was out all week, and I had been watching it from my bedroom window, looking out on the western horizon, and I was thinking, man, that's the brightest I've ever seen Venus. And one night, my wife's laying next to me, and she goes, I'm looking at the brightest star I've ever seen. And I said, yeah, it's Venus. It's the brightest star. And all of a sudden, when I said that, this thing just shot up straight in the air. And it took off toward the east. And I ran to the other bedroom to the east, and I'd seen this thing clip the horizon within 5 seconds. And it didn't make a sound. And I thought, well, that wasn't Venus.
That's not Venus.
But, the next night, Venus wasn't out. And I'm thinking, was this disguise thing disguising itself as Venus all week? Because it wasn't there the next night, and it looked just like Venus, and it shot across the horizon in like 5 seconds. It was unreal.
What could do that, Greg?
I have no idea what could do that except for and something that was unidentified.
That's right.
Or something that you could project into the air. I have no idea. But there's so many sightings of lights flitting around, and there has been for so long, that it's, you know, when somebody tells me there's no evidence or, you know, people are seeing things, that's a do not engage moment for me.
I don't think we have that kind of technology.
I'm not sure that we do. I think we might have technology to project something like that around, but I don't think we have the technology yet to do something like that. Although I did have somebody on my show that was talking about some kind of aircraft that use neutral buoyancy like helium and some sort of jet or rocket on it so that it can move around like a UFO and, you know, stop dead in the air, which seemed reasonable, but I haven't seen one of those things working, so I don't know if it really is.
What do you think of the so-called secret space program?
I don't know enough about it to make a decision on it, although it would be in the best interest of certain countries to have things in space that they don't tell anybody about.
That's true.
You know, I mean, the motivation is there. I don't know how far I'd take it. Some people have taken it very far, proposing, you know, breakaway civilizations and some sort of secret power structure that is involved in space, all kinds of things. I'm mostly interested in the UFO and in the UFO question. Although, you know, I hear about a lot of these things, partially from working at For Coast.
UFOs, physical or dimensional?
Yes.
Thanks a lot. This was our late webmaster, Greg Bishop.
They exhibit characteristics of both, of physical and not physical.
That's
true.
These are
the same people that... There's an argument, you know, obviously, in the Bigfoot community about whether Bigfoot is paranormal or not. Researcher David Weatherly, I had him on my show once, and
he's
talked
great.
About it.
Black-eyed yeah. children guy.
Uh-huh. And I said, well, David, you know, I'm going to ask you. You're a Bigfoot researcher, physical or paranormal. He said, have you ever considered that it might be a physical being that can move between dimensions?
Well, that's conceivable. Greg, we're going to take a break. We'll be back with the final calls next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, our final segment with our special friend, Greg Bishop. Greg also doubles as one of our backup webmasters on Coast to Coast, in addition to doing his own paranormal podcast. He's a noted researcher and author as well. Greg, the Captain Thomas Mantell case. This is, I'm going to read a little bit of this story and get your reaction to it. January 1948, 25-year-old Captain Thomas Mantell with the Kentucky Air National Guard, he was a pilot, died in the crash of his F-51 Mustang fighter after being sent in pursuit of an unidentified flying object. This event was among the most publicized early UFO incidents. David Jacobs, the UFO historian, argues that Mantell's case marked a sharp shift in both public and governmental perceptions of UFOs. Previously, the news media often treated UFO reports with a whimsical or glib attitude reserved for silly season use. But following Mantell's death, Jacob notes that the fact that a person had died in an encounter with an alleged flying saucer dramatically increased public concern about the phenomenon. Had you ever looked at that case?
Yeah, I'm of two minds about that case. One, it's unidentified and nobody's ever going to find out what it was, truly unidentified. And two, it might have been a skyhook balloon and then he mistook it. There's compelling evidence for both. And I know that some people don't like that, but like I said, I'm very open-minded about what I believe in these cases, and I think the jury's still out on it.
Yeah, but it did change the perception of UFOs, didn't it?
Yeah, whatever happened there, yeah, it did signal a kind of a change and that people should take it a little bit more seriously because it was a military pilot.
Well, there's no doubt. It was a dramatic case at the time, and, you know, that was a year after Roswell.
Yes, yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah. Yeah, let's go to Skype. Jacob is with us in British Columbia, Canada. Hi, Jacob. Go ahead.
How you doing, George? Very nice to meet you.
Great.
I want to talk to you about two things really quickly. One of the things is this past weekend you had a host on, a young lady, and she was talking to a guy, I believe his name was John Wills. He was talking about a gentleman that he met in Machu Picchu who had got up to the top of the mountain really quick, and he asked the guy how he got there. And he showed him a clip on his jeans, and he pressed that clip, and it turned into an orb, and the orb just flew around the guy's face for a second, then took off. So that was pretty strange.
Yeah.
The other thing is, we went camping off the coast of Vancouver Island here, and we saw so many things flying into the ocean and flying out, we came up with a name. We called them aqualiens.
Let me tell you, Jacob, that is an amazing UFO series of cases of submerged UFOs that even our Navy sailors have reported seeing as they glide underwater, lights on, next to Navy ships. Greg, I think the submersible UFO stories are amazing.
Yeah, they are. And these aren't just modern stories. These go back all the way back to when people were first, you know, traveling the sea in ships. I think even Christopher Columbus had a story of seeing something submerged near their ship when they were getting near North America the first time.
All-time favorite UFO story. Which one is it for you?
Let's see. Oh, you know what my all-time favorite is? Is the Eagle River Joe Simonton story. That's from, I believe, the late 50s. A chicken farmer said he heard a noise in his driveway, like tires on a wet pavement. He walked out there, and there was something he said that looked like two bowls, like soup bowls stuck together that were silvery. He went to the side, and there was a door in it, and inside he said there were two or three men, and the inside of the entire thing was, whatever it was all black. And he saw a guy cooking on a grill, he said, and the guy asked him to bring him a jug of water, and he made cookies or pancakes with him on the grill and gave him two of them.
That's funny.
And then the thing took off and left. One of the cookies or pancakes went to the Air Force. Their analysis said it was plain old, flax seed pancakes.
what if these saucers are time machines from the future?
They could be, but the thing is that a lot of reports have, whoever these things are, people or things or whatever they are, piloting them or operating them, are doing such nonsensical things over and over and over again, it seems like they don't even have any relationship to what a human motivation would be.
Well, that's true. Ricky's truck driving in Tennessee. Welcome to the program, Ricky.
Hey, hi, Julia. How are you, George?
Good, Rick. Thank you.
Listen, I was born and raised in South Louisiana, and before they built Interstate 10, I was about 10 or 12 years old. I ain't the only one who saw it. There was about three of us, and we were sitting on this old lady's front porch. Well, there was two string of lights that came across the sky. It looked like they was maybe a mile apart.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, they came together, right? And they hooked up. And then they made a big circle, and they spun around, looked like for maybe 2-3 minutes or something. And then they started going up in the sky, and they turned sideways, and then all of a sudden that thing shot up in the air. I mean, it was unbelievable. And when we get together, we all talk about this, you know, about what we saw. And we know it was not an airplane.
Not at all. They don't do circles like that, that's for sure.
It really flipped me out. I mean, I'm like, oh my. And, you know, I've never really hardly told nobody about it because I mean, you know, I don't want somebody to think I'm off in the head. But I know what I saw.
And I got to tell you, Ricky, a lot of police officers have seen objects like that as well. I remember, Greg, talking to some police officers from Millstadt, Illinois, back in the 90s, late 90s, and they saw an incredible-looking object as well. I mean, something's out there.
Yeah, it's funny that the caller said he's from Louisiana. That's exactly where Charles Hickson, the original Pascagoula
case, yeah.
Yeah, witness, one of the original witnesses, and his family, southern Louisiana in the forest there, when they were driving through, had that strange encounter with some bright saucer-shaped thing.
Greg, where were you born?
Pasadena, California.
Okay, so you're a California guy.
Yeah.
And did you ever investigate that case of, you know, in the 40s, where that Los Angeles UFO case where they...
The air raid?
The air raid. They were shooting at it. They could hear pings bouncing off it.
Yeah, I've looked into it.
What do you think it was?
I have no idea what that thing was, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't something mundane, because how could they have missed?
Exactly. They had lights up on it and everything.
Yeah, there were barrages of anti-aircraft going the whole time. People said they saw some kind of a shape in there, but nobody could figure out what it was.
Well, and they were hitting it with shell fire.
Yeah.
People could hear, you know, bling, stuff like that. A balloon.
It was right after Pearl Harbor, like 3 months after Pearl Harbor, and people were freaked out by it.
Could it have been a Japanese craft of some kind?
If it was, they should have won the war.
They probably would have won the war if they had something like that.
Yeah.
Let's go to Houston, Texas. Mike's with us. Michael, go ahead.
Hey, George. How you doing? It's good.
Great.
To speak to you again, and Greg as well.
Thank you.
Hey, George, thanks for playing that Frankie Valli song. That's one of my all-time.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, me too.
Fond memories. Anyways, a few good researchers. Tim Good, who wrote about Top Secret.
Yep.
Richard Dolan. Your own George Knapp. He's an excellent.
Oh, he's a great ufology.
Yeah, I should have mentioned him, yeah.
Yeah, as well as Leslie Kane. And also I wanted to mention The Day the Earth Stood Still. That was allegedly based on a person by the name of Valiant Thor. I don't know if you heard about the story, Stranger in the
Pentagon. Yeah, that's absolutely. That he came and met with our officials and we turned him down or something.
Exactly. Anyways, I wanted to ask Greg if he's done much research into the MIB phenomenon. The reason why I ask is... I don't think we're dealing with government officials here. I think we're dealing with aliens because they seem to not be human. They seem to have supernatural abilities.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to be able to come and go as they please. They just disappear. And so have you drawn any conclusions on the Men in Black phenomenon?
Not any conclusions, but there are cases to be made for early versions of these being people that from the government that are simply piggybacking on something that had been going on for a long time, and also the stories of Albert K. Bender, who was the first one that wrote a book called The Flying Saucers and the Three Men. This is one of my ideas about UFO researchers, is that people should be asked what happened after and before their experience.
Encounter, yeah.
Because a lot of information happens, a lot of things happen after. The Father Gill case in New Guinea from the...
That's a great case.
Yeah. Not many people know that about, I don't know, 5, 10, 15 minutes before the case, before the actual sighting, somebody knocked on the door of where Father Gill and some of his parishioners were there in New Guinea, And they went to the door, and nobody was there. They went back in, and then a few minutes later, somebody ran in and said, "There, there's this thing floating over the beach," and they went out to look at it.
They could see occupants up there.
Yes, they were waving at them and everything. It's a fascinating case. J. Allen Hynek actually flew out to New Guinea to interview Father Gill about it, and he's very matter-of-fact about what was going on.
Does that sound like a balloon sighting? Like a Hindenburg type?
No, they said it was a platform that was probably 300-400 feet up in the air with these figures that would appear and disappear over the edge of the, you know, they could see them over the edge, and they would wave at them, and they would wave their arms, and the figures would wave back, and after a while they lost interest in them. They still moved around on this, on whatever this platform was or craft, and then amazingly enough, they all went back inside after they got bored, apparently, with waving at these people, and they came back out later and it was gone.
How about the Dogon tribe that talks about the binary star system, the Sirius star system that we didn't know about for years? They knew about it. They had no telescopes. And when asked where did they get the information, they pointed to the sky.
Yeah. So I who knows what happened then? There's somebody in the 1960s, I think, made a case that French astronomers had come out and talked to them and put that idea in their head. But as with a lot of these stories, it's not proven that that's what happened. So either something came and told them, they somehow astrally traveled there, they were able to tell the future, and that became their mythology. Who knows, but it's a fascinating case.
Let's go to Deborah, first-time caller in Dayton, Ohio. Hi, Deborah, go ahead.
Hey, how are you?
Great.
Pleasure to see you.
You too.
Hey, Deborah.
I have a question for Greg. In your collection of UFO songs, I was wondering if you have ever heard of one called Little Blue Man by Betty Johnson.
Yes, I love that song.
I still have the 45 from when I was 12 years old.
Deborah, I'm going to ask you to kind of sing it a little bit for us, just to give us an idea of what it's like.
I can't sing. I know that he tugs at her sleeve and says he loves her, the Little Blue Man. And then he haunts her for weeks.
Yes, and then he throws her off. She goes up and throws him off the top of the building, and then she sees him right after that, and he says, "I don't love you anymore."
And he says, "I don't love you anymore." I'm so glad you've heard of it. No one else has.
I love flying saucer music. It seems about a third to a half of it is that sped up chipmunk voice is always the alien voice. So I'm actually kind of happy when I find songs where they don't sound like chipmunks.
What's the strangest UFO song you've got in your collection of 90?
Oh, my God. There's so many strange ones.
Are they all weird?
No, not all of them. Some of them are just, you know, there's one called Books About UFOs by, I think, Frank Black. But the strangest one is probably Walter Brennan song's in the running.
I used to do Walter Brennan impressions when I was like 12 years old.
Can you do one now?
Yeah, I can. Ready?
Sound like, yeah.
Hashy and Little Luke, get over here.
That's pretty good.
That is.
Yeah.
Imagine me doing that at 12.
Yeah. Walter Brennan, he sounds like that.
Yeah. That's right. He did a song?
Yeah, Space Mice.
Did he sing it or talk it?
He talked it. In fact, all of his, I don't know what it is with Walter Brennan. If you go to, there still are used record stores around, there are so many Walter Brennan records.
I didn't know that.
Like weeds.
I did not know that. Greg, we've only got a minute left. Would you give folks information on where they can get your books and how they can listen to your podcast and track you?
Okay, yeah. The podcast is Radio Mysterioso. I do it live on Sundays, usually, and then it's posted later. Also, if you just type my name in on Amazon, my books will come up, all of them, and you can get them through there.
Super. And Greg, thanks for helping us on the coasttocoastam.com website, too.
Sure. I always enjoy it.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much, Greg.
Thanks for the interview tonight, George. I really enjoyed it.
Greg Bishop and all those websites that he talked about are linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. On our next Coast to Coast program, we've got Paul Smith joining us to talk about remote viewing. And then for the last 2 hours of the program tomorrow night, we're going to have open lines for you here on Coast to Coast. Thursday, investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe joins us with stories of high strangeness. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Lottasour, Greg Bishop, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burles, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.